You're lying on the operating table. You're under general anaesthetic, out to the world, about to have major surgery. Then, slowly, at first imperceptibly, you begin to hear muffled sounds in the distance. You gradually become aware of voices, but not what's being said. You're in pain, terrible, excruciating pain. You try moving. You try to signal to the people around you that you're awake, that you're in pain, but you can't. You're paralysed. It's as if you're trapped under a sheet of heavy glass and there's no way out. This is what anaesthetists call accidental awareness. And it's that terrifying prospect, that space between consciousness and unconsciousness, that captured the imagination of journalist and author Kate Cole Adams. It's the subject of her book, Anaesthesia. Kate, hello, welcome.
Hi, Amanda.
Now, how did this all start for you, this interest? I mean, what I've described didn't happen to you, did it?
No. But many years ago, when I lived in the Blue Mountains outside Sydney, I went to a dinner party at a friend's place, and halfway through the dinner party, one of the guests there started describing for the rest of us the birth of her second child, her daughter. And the story was so overwhelming. I'd never heard anything like it.
So what was the story?
Basically, the story was that I basically followed it up some days later. So I rang her and said, will you tell me this story? And she said, yes. And her name is Rachel Benmayer. And her story was that she went in for, she had to have an emergency Caesar. And at the hospital she was at, they couldn't give her, she had to have a general. So she went under. And the next thing she knew, she woke up and she was aware of voices, but mainly she was aware of this terrible, terrible pain. But she didn't even know yet that it was even pain. She told me later that she thought that she must have been in a car accident and that there was a car reversing backwards and forwards over her body. And really things kind of went from bad to worse. And the sort of, you know, the long story was that she basically spent the entire operation awake and fully able to feel everything. But because she was one of the ingredients in a general anaesthetic, in about half the general anaesthetics that get administered these days, especially in the West, is a paralysing agent, a muscle blockade, which actually makes it impossible to move. There's all sorts of good reasons why doctors use that, because they don't actually want their patients wriggling around when they're operating on them. Mm. But it meant that for Rachel, she was one of the few, and it really is few, but very unfortunate.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you, actually, because, you know, for your research, you spoke to anaesthetists and psychologists. So Rachel's experience, that experience of waking up while you're under general anaesthetic, how common is it?
Well, this whole process, everyone has different opinions, but it is generally accepted that 1 to 2 people per 1,000 remember waking under an anaesthetic. Now, only a very small proportion of those would be in Rachel's situation, which would be in terrible pain. For quite a few, they just wake, they hear some noises, they're a bit aware of something going on. It's not a particular problem. They go back to sleep. But for someone like Rachel, obviously, it's a terrible, terrible problem. And the people who have these sorts of experiences, even if they're, you know, Rachel's was a long experience, but even short experiences are associated with a lot of trauma post-operatively, and in the years following, it's got a very high conversion to post-traumatic stress disorder. Mm. The feeling is that that's mainly because the paralysis is so terrifying. And often people like Rachel, they don't even realise what's happening. They're just, and then they do start to realise what's happening, and it can obviously be quite nightmarish. I don't want to scare people off having anaesthetics. This is,
well, you're doing a pretty good job at the moment. Well, look, let's go back then. Just give us a quick history of the development of anaesthetic used for surgery? Because, you know, in most cases, it is a completely brilliant thing.
It is completely brilliant. And, you know, I am a big fan of anaesthesia generally and then anaesthetists. But it, essentially, and I think it's really easy to forget because we're now so familiar with anaesthetics, we're so familiar with surgery, that you know, until the middle 19th century, there was no general anaesthesia. I mean, there were some doctors who, in little sort of corners, were practicing with various different sort of things. But you know, at that point, the most well known alternative was actually a form of hypnosis. So then, in you know, sort of, I think it was 1846, the first actual demonstration, public demonstration of anaesthesia happened, and that was with a drug called nitrous oxide, which is still the workhorse of a lot of today's anaesthetics.
Laughing gas, isn't it?
Laughing gas, Laughing gas was the, you know, and that was sort of developed along with ether at about that time, and that was just world-changing. It changed medicine. Up until that point, there were hardly any operations in any of the hospitals any year, mainly because a lot of patients simply chose to die. You know, there are just the most extraordinarily ghoulish stories about patients, you know, trying to, being clamped, strapped down to the operating table.
Let's not go there.
But fortunately, anaesthetics came along and,
So what's in an anaesthetic nowadays, a general anaesthetic?
It's a combination. I mean, we call it a general anaesthetic, but it's a cocktail really. And there tends to be a drug to take away consciousness, whatever consciousness is, which is also up for debate. But that's known as the hypnotic. There's a drug or drugs to take away pain. And often, as we were just discussing, there's a drug to take away, to stop the patient moving on on the table. Those are the main components.
Do anaesthetics today produce a kind of a shallower unconsciousness that means waking up during surgery is perhaps more possible?
I don't know that it's a shallower unconsciousness. I think what's happened in sort of, you know, more recently is that there's a sort of growing use of these some very, very effective shorter acting intravenous agents, and one of them is called propofol, and it's an extremely well known, you know, from the patient's point of view, very effective and really pleasant drug. You don't wake up feeling sick. In fact, you wake up feeling pretty great from my last experience. Because these drugs actually, you don't need to put patients under as heavily to keep them unconscious, it does kind of raise some questions about whether, even when a patient is unconscious, the sort of whether there's some what kind of mental processing is
there a degree
there
of
in the
consciousness?
Background? Yeah, or what is consciousness? Yeah. Because in a sense, you know, for me, the whole problem with, you know, thinking, oh, I'm being a journalist, I'm going to go and investigate anaesthesia. Of course, what I ended up with was not what's anaesthesia, which is a great big question, but actually what does anaesthesia take away, which is consciousness. What's consciousness? We can't agree. I don't know the answer.
Kate Cole Adams is the author of Anaesthesia, The Gift of Oblivion and the Mystery of Consciousness. And you're listening to Life Matters with Amanda Smith. Now, what's your experience of general anaesthetic? It seems to me to be kind of unbelievable that you just disappear from the world for a while. I'd be curious to hear from you about your particular experiences of anaesthesia. You can share with us on Facebook. Now, Kate, even today, with all the advances in neuroscience and technology to monitor the brain, experts still say that there's no way we can be sure that a given patient is asleep, particularly once they're paralysed and can't move. Were you surprised by that? Because I've got to say, I am. I mean, it seems extraordinary that, you know, although I know the death rate is tiny from anaesthetics nowadays, we really don't know how it works.
I was very surprised to to find all of this out, really. And once I'd sort of met Rachel and talked about her experience, I started investigating, and I was surprised at how much we don't know. A number of anaesthetists have explained it to me, and I think it's quite a good way of putting it. They say, look, you don't actually have to understand everything about how a car works to be able to drive it. And anaesthetists do understand a lot, but fundamentally, we still don't know how those drugs bring about unconsciousness. We know a lot more than we did. We've known for a long time that the anaesthetics react with the sort of oily membranes around the brain cells, and I'm not a doctor. I'm not even going to try and go into that. But also they kind of, well, there's increasing evidence that they also disrupt the way that different parts of the brain communicate with each other.
The question of consciousness and unconsciousness has really captured our imagination for a long time, and there have been all sorts of attempts to illuminate the experience. Tell us about Bernard Levinson's experiment.
I love this experiment, and this was one of the, when I first started researching this question, this was one of the experiments that I came upon that really made me, really hooked me in, and I just thought, I've got to find out more about this. So Bernard Levinson was a young South African, he's now an old South African psychiatrist, but back then he was a young South African doctor, and he was working with practicing anaesthesia, I think, and he was working with a dentist, and he decided, for various reasons, he decided that he wanted to do an experiment. And so he asked the dentist to allow him to interview the patients who were coming in that day. And Levinson interviewed them all. He established which ones were most easily hypnotized, and then he got the dentist to do an experiment. And the experiment was, which you would never be allowed to do these days, which is why I call this the unrepeatable experiment, because of the experiment, you can't do experiments like this anymore. But in the experiment, basically halfway through their dental surgery.
They were
put under with an ether anaesthetic, which was back then, you know, this was back in the mid 60s, 65. So back then that was mm-hmm. the kind of main, one of the main anaesthetics. When they were deeply under, Levinson had the anaesthetist read out a prepared statement, and a mock drama. And the statement basically said something like, stop the operation. I don't like the patient's colour. They're looking very blue. And then there was a kind of, get the breathing bag. And then there's a kind of, you know, sort of silence while they all pretend to be doing stuff, and someone pumps some bellows so it sounds like a breathing bag. And then the doctor says, oh, it's all right. It's looking fine. You know, it's all great. Let's continue. So when they wake up, Levinson interviews them, or someone interviews them and asks them how the surgery was and whether they remember anything. They all say, fine, no, nothing. And then a month later, Levinson takes each of these patients back to his own consulting rooms, and he hypnotically regresses them. And under hypnosis, four of the eight turn out to remember verbatim parts of the script. Another couple of them remembered sort of flashes, moments of it, and the other two became quite upset under questioning and sort of came out of their hypnosis and didn't want to talk about it.
It's an amazing story. So what does that tell you?
Well, it's a fabulous story. I think there are all sorts of reasons. There are all sorts of problems with the way the experiment was staged, and and Bernard Levinson, who I've spoken to on a number of occasions, completely acknowledges that it wasn't blinded. He knew exactly who the patients were. There were all sorts of things that he should have done if it was going to be a kind of, you know, adhering to the scientific method. So it's not seen as necessarily reliable.
Nevertheless, what does it tell you?
What it tells me is that there are some real questions that we tend not to ask ourselves about what an anaesthetic is and what an anaesthetic does. And, you know, I don't pretend to know the answers to these questions, but really my book explores how much not only don't I know, but how much the people who are actually administering these drugs don't know, and how quickly. What interested me was how quickly, when you sort of move from talking about neurology and pharmacology in this conversation, very quickly you're suddenly talking about philosophy and ethics. And there's questions that we simply don't know the answers to.
But it's a fascinating subject, isn't it, Kate?
It is.
Well, look, thank you so much for joining us here in Life Matters.
Thanks, Amanda.
Kate Cole Adams is the author of Anaesthesia, The Gift of Oblivion and the Mystery of Consciousness.